to discuss. Continue to get your SMSs in 0416 90 50 52. Going to take a break on the other side of this. We're going to discuss Melbourne v Sydney. Peter Verlandi's in the red corner, Mike Simon's in the blue.
RSN 927's Racing Pulse presents The Verdict.
Welcome back to The Verdict. There's been a lot of discussion in the past few weeks about the change of race states and the shape of the Spring Carnival in Sydney, how it affects Melbourne, and also how the changes have been ratified by either the Patent Committee or Racing Australia. And it's great to have Peter Verlandi's on the show to clear up a few of these questions and have a chat to us. Say what you want about Pete, but the good thing is that he always makes himself available to come on and answer these questions. And he's back fresh from a holiday too. Good morning, Pete. How are you?
Mate, the holiday was only 3 days. I don't think quite as a holiday, but anyway, I'll take whatever I can get. But I feel as though I'm a Christian, you know, walking into the Colosseum at the moment. But...
Introducing anyone by saying, say what you like about it.
No, that's the one thing about Pete. He always sticks his head up and he's willing to answer the questions. And there's been a lot of questions, Pete. Unfortunately, our friends at Racing Australia haven't been so forthcoming and making themselves available. So we're very pleased that you're on, because a lot of the questions down here surrounding the announcement which was made a few weeks ago regarding the changes is, have they been ratified? Oh. Were they taken to the Patent Committee and Racing Australia?
Well, first off, I think there's quite a misconception about the Patent Committee. The Patent Committee is an advisory committee to the Board of Racing Australia. Racing Australia is the decision maker. The Patent Committee is not the decision making body. I think what we have to go back 10 years, in my view. The world has changed in the last 10 years. What the Patent Committee was considering 10 years ago probably isn't what they should be considering now. Because 10 years ago, when there was no competition in the wagering market, everybody that bet on the tab, each state, earned the revenue. It didn't matter if the New South Wales punter bet on a Melbourne race or a bet on a Sydney race, New South Wales would get the revenue. Well, that's changed completely. Because now, if a New South Wales punter bets with a corporate bookmaker, on a Melbourne meeting, we get nothing. So there's got a little protectionism that used to be around with the Patent Committee. I don't think it is relevant in today. The world has changed dramatically.
But isn't another core role of the Patent Committee to protect the established flow and maximise the proper flow of races from state to state, sort of holistically around the country? Isn't that one of its roles too? And isn't the criticism here that some of your moves have sort of invaded one territory upon another, and whether... if it's not up to the Patent Committee to observe that sort of thing, then whose role is it?
Well, as I said, the world has changed. The wagering landscape has changed. I think if a Patent Committee tried to restrict competition, it might have a bit of a problem with the Trade Practices Act. We are competing for the wagering dollar, and the Patent Committee self-regulated itself and made these rules in relation to when races should be not conflicting with each other. But that's changed. The wagering landscape has changed, where... like it or not, we are in competition with each other. You know, if a punter has a bet on Flemington and Racing Victoria gets the revenue, great. But New South Wales misses out. You can't have protectionism in 2017 as you did in 1997. The world has changed. The wagering landscape has changed. You catch what you eat. You eat what you catch, I should say. And if we don't promote New South Wales racing, we'll just lag behind for the next 10 years. Because our revenues will decline significantly. My job is to maximise the revenues for New South Wales racing, and that's exactly what I'm going to do, and I should have the opportunity to do so in any manner I have at my disposal.
Pete, it's Mike here. I totally respect your thoughts on that. If the Patent Committee is an advisory board to Racing Australia, then if Racing Australia is the decision maker in terms of providing consent for, you know, changes to race programs, what has been Racing Australia's role in the recent race changes that were announced by Racing New South Wales?
Look, I've been on the Racing Australia for 14 years. I don't think it's Racing Australia's role to determine a state jurisdiction's race program. I think Racing Australia is there for commonality of rules, for things that, you know, that the consumer doesn't get confused about if you're going from state to state.
So if it doesn't have a role, Pete, is it up? Can each state just cannibalise without restriction on each other's territory?
Matt, I don't think it's cannibalise. I prefer to call it competition. I mean,
cannibalition.
You can call it that. But I mean, why should incumbency be protected? I mean, why can't you introduce competition? I mean, the competition that we've introduced has paid dividends to the participants in Victoria. Only last month, there were significant prize money increases in Victoria. That's fantastic because at the moment, like it or not, registrations of racehorses throughout Australia are down about 10%. We need to do everything in our power to maximise the returns to participants to make the racing industry viable. And if competition does that, great.
But Pete, just on that, we've got a scenario now where the Hill Stakes and the Underwood are one day apart, the Underwood being a Group 1 race worth $750,000 over 9 furlongs, and the Hill Stakes over the same distance the day earlier. You're essentially denying the connections of horses that would compete in those races the opportunity to run in both races because the races are now 24 hours apart.
Not necessarily, Mike. I don't quite agree with that because it gives other opportunity for horses that may not have gone in either of those races. I think, you know, you've got to look at the total picture. But I come back to the point, though, why should the incumbent state continue to have incumbency forever and ever and restrict other states from maximising their revenue?
Because it's not as much about the state benefiting. It's Australian racing that benefits from, you know, because racing has a shrinking kind of acceptance in society these days. When you get these big carnivals, Peter, you've got to maximise, and if you put too many eggs in different baskets, you're diluting something that really can't afford to be diluted to that much to attract mainstream interest. You know, there's a different way of looking at it. You know, I don't think it's necessarily which state dominates and which state has established territory. It's about the national flow and what flows best and how it's best appreciated.
Look, I agree with some of that, Matt, but I don't agree with all of it. Why should New South Wales be restricted to promoting racing in New South Wales? I mean, you know, if we succeed and it is popular and it creates more interest for punters in New South Wales and audience in New South Wales, well, Victoria will have a benefit as well because some of these races do flow onto the Spring Carnival in Victoria. You know, we need to lift the profile of racing in New South Wales. We need to do everything in our power to do so. And I think ultimately the benefits will also go to Victoria because if you have a bigger audience in New South Wales, which is the most populous state in Australia, it has benefits for other states.
Why was the Everest program for October 14? I'm coming back to this idea that Caulfield has a historic, successful right to be the launched venue of the very successful Spring Carnival.
Why does it have a right, Matt? I mean, why is this protectionism? Look, I'm sure that a man of Mike Simon's...
Well, so if Wimbledon's on, you think that the people of Roland Garros should stump up $10 million to lure Nadal away from Wimbledon?
Well, I think that analogy is quite irrelevant, to be honest. Look, incumbency doesn't mean you're going to be there forever. You know, if you don't create competition, you know, we'll just all get apathetic and do nothing. I mean, I can't understand why incumbency is protected. It's like protecting, you know, in economics, protectionism is the wrong thing. You know, you need to have free trade. And here, it's basically, look, I've got to concede that possibly the 14th of October might not have been the best date, but it is for this year, and we have to make the best of it. In future years, we are trying to run the Everest at night on a Friday night, so it's one of those situations for this year. But look, the best time of the year to race, without a doubt, is the Spring Carnival area because you've got no AFL, you've got no NRL, cricket hasn't started, you've got complete media space, as you'd know, Matt, to promote racing. So we want to use that media space in New South Wales.
So the extension of this, Pete, is that if Racing Victoria decided to extend their autumn carnival to compete head-on with your championships, that you'd have no opposition to that because it just supports what you're saying about there's no entitlement to incumbency.
Absolutely. I'd be hypocritical if I had anything else, Mike. I mean, if you...
You're seriously saying you wouldn't have any cringing objection to an encroachment like that?
No, I wouldn't because I think competition improves everyone's performance. I will try harder and promote heavier during the autumn. I mean, incumbency doesn't mean that you own it. I mean, incumbency is a thing of 1997. You have to appreciate the wagering landscape in Australia has changed. Every state has to maximise its turnover. Racing Victoria is doing a great job maximising its turnover. It announces that, you know, that it's had 12% increases in turnover. You know, New South Wales, in the last financial year, we've had a 12% increase in revenue and a 9% increase in turnover. That's what I'm there to do, is to improve the revenues so I can pay more dividends to my participants.
So, Pete, you admit then that the raising of the Craven stakes to $500,000 is purely and simply the Winx benefit, to keep Winx in town, because you want to promote racing as much as possible, and that's why you're going to boost those.
But the
those
race
races.
Remains boosted even when Winx disappears. No, suddenly you've got an overly boosted race because the horse you tried to attract is retired.
No, that's not right. I mean, what New South Wales is trying to do is create a strong middle distance weight for age path that works towards the Melbourne races. You do the same in autumn. You have the car line, the Peter Young and the Australian Cup.
If Winx didn't exist, would you still be as passionate about these changes?
Absolutely. Mm. I mean, look, there's certainly a tinge of that Winx is here, but Winx could, God forbid, break down tomorrow. And we still got those races. And now these races are going to continue to be upgraded and in prize money for time to come.
It looks a bit of an imbalance, though, when it's the same amount of money as the Group 1 George Main.
I don't think so. Look, as I said, we're trying to build a strong middle-distance weight-for-age path, just like Victoria has successfully done in the autumn with the Carline, the Peter Young and the Australia Cup. Why would you begrudge us?
We lead into you in the autumn, and it's got good symmetry, and everyone benefits. You lead into us in the spring, and it's one of those things in racing that is a successful flow. And
and Matt, we are doing that. Mm. You know, we are leading into... There is a couple of clashes, I'll acknowledge that. But overall, the climax of your spring carnival, which your Cox Plate and Centre aren't affected. And we will look in future years to try to make it a bit more complementary, but at the moment... that's what we've done, and as I said, incumbency doesn't mean you own it.
So the relevance of Racing Australia, Pete, must be seriously questioned in light of your comments.
I don't think so. Look, we're very fortunate to have a chief executive of the calibre of Barry O'Farrell. I think this Section 457 visa issue indicates that. That had to be a national approach. That a bloke had to be able to get into the doors in Canberra. You know, he got in there, he solved it within a month. If we didn't have a person of the calibre of Barry O'Farrell to fix that, it could have been years. You know, half our workforce could be gone, half the trainers could
But he and Racing Australia can't do anything when it comes to race dates and programming. The individual states can do what they want.
No, but we have to appreciate that we are different states. Every state in Australia has different legislation on how it operates. There's some massive changes being made in other states where all three codes are together and there's separate rule commissions and separate stewarding, etc. The world has changed and it's continued to change. Racing Australia has never been a body that promotes a monopoly.
Okay. Can I ask you about just something about the Everest Re, where we're at, and obviously the Caravaggio situations. Everyone's on tenterhooks about where he sits now, but just the Canterbury thing. So is it right that Canterbury is probably going to be redeveloped in the next 3 or 4 years? So that the $3 million upgrade for a polytrack, which is the preference of Coolmore and Godolphin, say, in future years if they come, and the upgrade of a track that's not going to be around for much longer at the cost of $3 million, I know it's upset a few trainers up there who think the money could be redirected elsewhere. Why isn't the established setup at Canterbury with a vacant course proper and so on adequate for these visiting horses if they do come?
Firstly, Canterbury can't be sold till 2021. It's 4 years away, and no one's saying at the moment that Canterbury will be sold. Canterbury is a vital asset in the racing infrastructure at the moment. It is used as a quarantine centre. I compliment the ATC in being proactive in fixing its facilities. I mean, you're damned if you do and if you're damned if you don't. You have to look at the overall package of the ATC. The ATC are going to be spending tens of millions of dollars fixing infrastructure and training facilities and looking after their core function, which is racing. So, you know, Canterbury is one element of many. Warwick Farm is going to get substantial training tracks. Rose Hill's got a $7
million. It's been fast-tracked for one horse, hasn't it?
I don't think so. Look, at the end, the other thing that the ATC want to do, one of the successes here in Sydney has been the country highway races. They'd like to have a facility here days before these country races for country trainers. There's going to be other uses of Canterbury just other than the... quarantine centre and the pro ride.
Wouldn't fixing the Randwick track be of more prominence?
Well, you can't. No, because Randwick is already full of horses. You can't take any more horses at Randwick. The stables are all taken. The tracks are all taken. Canterbury is the perfect place to expand possible new training facilities. Right. I think it's very unfair to say that it's all been done for quarantine centre. The ATC, as I said, this is one facet of significant amount of money being spent on core assets of training and stables and race courses. I mean, they're spending a substantial amount at Rose Hill that nobody's talking about. That's $7 or $8 million they're spending at Rose Hill. They're putting in a new pro ride track there, or poly track, whichever the one's going to be. They're fixing up the existing sand tracks. You know, they're spending a lot of money on the Kensington track, making sure that it's state of the art, and there's no more problems in the future. And there's money set aside for the course proper. So, right.
Just a quick one on the flights. Just a couple of little logistics with the Everest. Say you do get Caravaggio. What's the situation? My understanding is that he can't share flights with Melbourne bound or quarantine or anything like that with Melbourne bound Cups or Cox Plate horses. What's the situation with flight availability and protocols with getting that horse out here, and cost? Who foots the bill for Caravaggio?
Look, those sort of logistics we have, we've got to get Caravaggio on the plane to start with. I mean, he's not confirmed, and he's not the only horse that's shown interest. There's a number of horses in the United Kingdom that have shown interest. Quite surprising, there's about five or six of them that have shown interest. There's also, for the first time, horses from the USA. There's horses from Japan. So there's quite a few. I think everyone's concentrating on Caravaggio, but he's not the only horse. There's a lot of other horses that are, and that's another reason why I think it's a great investment by the ATC at Canterbury, because it'll also be there for the championships. And it'll also be there for the other many horses that may be coming. Look, for the amount of horses the Everest has attracted in its first year has been phenomenal, and it's good for Australian racing. And, you know, what we want to do with the Everest is continue to increase the prize money to make it a draw card for all these international horses.
Is it true you want it to be $20 million in a couple of years?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, you've got to have an objective, you've got to have a vision, you've got to have a dream. Our dream is to have it $15 million in the next 3 years, and then ultimately $20 million. That's exactly... We have made a commitment that all the revenues that we generate from the Everest will go back into the prize money. So the slot owners have been on... You should have bought one, Mike. You would have been a big winner, mate.
Mike Simons, not Mike Felgate.
Yeah, no, Pete knows I couldn't afford
it. Yeah,
know we were close, Pete.
Yeah, I know you were very close. And I was looking forward to having you there as a slot owner, because, look, the slot owners are having a great time. We've been inundated with people wanting to buy slots now, but we're not going to open it back up.
Challenge, Pete, will be for the slot owners who own horses that finish in the second half of the field and therefore don't recoup their full outlay, whether they'll have the same appetite to reinvest in years 4, 5, and 6.
Well, it depends, Mike, because they might be still paying $600,000 when it's $15 million. You know, these sort of things have got to be ironed out in the future. But, you know, at the end of the day, the maximum they can lose is $425,000, because they get $180,000 for running last. So,
Running for the world's richest race yet coming out of it losing is an awkward thing to get your head around to some degree. But that's part of it.
Well, I've got to tell you, every owner that goes into racing thinking they're going to win is in for a shock, because in New South Wales, owners as a group pay $320 million in just having their horses compete. They're only getting $200 million back in returns to owners and prize money. So owners, like it or not, still subsidise the industry. They subsidise every facet of the industry. And that's why we have to maximise revenue to get more return to the owners, to make it more viable for people to invest in the industry. That's why the registrations are down so much. And I think it's fantastic that Victoria's increasing prize money, and it's fantastic that they've got a person like Mike Simons running Melbourne Racing Club, because these people are commercial savvy, and that's exactly what you need right now.
That's an interesting ringtone there, Pete.
Yeah, hey, fireworks.
We've got to wrap things up. Just as we leave, just final clarification. The announcements that you've made are set in stone. It does not need to go through Racing Australia. The changes have been made, and no consultation needs to be made with Racing Australia or any other racing principals.
Look, I believe that we've got to be very careful that we're not in breach of the Trade Practices Act and colluding in protectionism. And, you know, one of the things that's always been a concern about Racing Australia, especially with states being responsible for their race field legislation and how they generate revenue, you've got to ensure that we're squeaky clean in relation to competition. And this, in my view, is competition. It's just all about competition.
Pete, appreciate you coming on and answering all the questions.
No problem at all. My pleasure.
Peter Vallandi, CEO of Racing.